sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Criticism.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Losers.
Movement.
It's my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression.
Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
focus,
culture,
human rights,
Cartagena,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings with my co-host Gord Barnes, and there are so many things happening in the world today. We decided to highlight a few of the areas where there are serious human rights violations in evidence, and also talk about some local stuff that's happening here as well. So welcome, Gord.
Thank you, Jim, and special welcome to all of our listeners who are listening today to Human Rights Radio. It's good to be back after a bit of a break. You had a little bit of a holiday there for a few weeks, Jim, and we're back and ready to roll here. At the beginning of the program, I just wanted to share a bit of an update because our planning for our fall Saskatchewan Amnesty International conference is proceeding quite well. We've had one for the last 2 years. 2 years ago, there was one in Regina at the university, and people came from all over the province. Last year it was in October in Moose Jaw, and again it was really well attended with people from across Saskatchewan. Both times we called the conferences Get Active with Amnesty International, and we'll be doing that again. This year we're very pleased because it's going to be held in Humboldt, Saskatchewan. I expect most people know where that is, but it's just for people who might not be too sure. It's about an hour east of Saskatoon, so we're hoping we'll get a good response from people in Saskatoon and area. Also, it's, you know, really quite convenient for people in the Melfort, Kenora, Yorkton areas to get into Humboldt in the morning before the conference starts. So that'll be on October 18th, Saturday, October 18th. And we're going to be posting more information about this on our Facebook page. You'll be able to watch for that in the next few weeks. But I just wanted to share, we've got some news now with respect to who will be attending in terms of the key people from Amnesty International Canada who will be helping with workshops and speaking at the conference. One of them is one of our board of directors for Amnesty International Canada. She actually lives in Winnipeg and was elected at the annual meeting 2 years ago. Her name is Josa Manzanilla, and she's actually somebody who was active initially in the Winnipeg group and also participated in her early involvement in Amnesty International and one of our human rights colleges that happens as part of the Amnesty International Canada annual meeting. And she's now the Philippines country coordinator. She was actually born on the islands of the Philippines and then later raised in the desert of Saudi Arabia. She is the daughter of overseas Filipino workers who eventually immigrated to the prairies to Manitoba. Josa received her undergrad degree from Queen's University and went on to complete a master's specializing in human rights, social justice, and development from the International Institute of Social Studies at The Hague in Netherlands. So she's a really well-qualified individual in terms of the contributions she's making to our board, and we're very pleased that she'll be coming to Saskatchewan for the first time to participate and help with workshops at the conference. I expect people will really find her a very interesting individual. So in addition to Josa, two other people that will be participating are from the staff. One is Jackie Hansen, who was here last year. Many people who will have participated in the conference last year will know Jackie is our major campaigns coordinator for Amnesty International on the staff. She works on a range of campaigns, including women's human rights issues, our current campaign against torture, and is just a tremendous activist and has lots of skills to share. Another individual who will be coming from the staff is a good friend, Lily Mawson, who's our resource for the field worker program. I'm a Amnesty International field worker volunteer, and Lily is our kind of staff resource for that program. But also, she helps with the community groups program all across Canada, and she'll be a good resource for all of the people who are attending the conference. And I think we'll be having an opportunity for some additional training for people who might want to become more involved in as a volunteer with Amnesty International. We're looking at having an additional day of training that Lily is going to help with. So lots of stuff on the horizon with respect to the conference. As I say, that'll be October 18th in Humboldt, and really looking forward to it. Just watch for updates on that, and we'll probably be sharing more information about that as we go.
Well, that's great. I'm looking forward to it. I've been to the ones that we've had here in Regina, and I think it was time to move them up a little. Have we had any in Saskatoon? I think we have. But
years ago, we did have conferences in Saskatoon, and we're probably looking at having one there 2 years from now. We thought it would be a good idea to make this one close to Saskatoon, but also make it work for people who are kind of further away in the northeast part of the province.
No, I think it's a good idea.
That's part of the idea. There's a really strong history of social justice activism in the Humboldt and area community, and we think this is a really good opportunity to connect with people there.
Yep, really looking forward to it. And I think it's going to be early enough in October. We should miss bad weather.
I hope so.
But in this country, who knows?
Yeah.
Well, we'll take what comes, I guess. But I'm cautiously optimistic.
October 18th, it better not snow.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
We were going to share a little bit of information with respect to the conflict in Gaza. And I think, Jim, you've got something that has been prepared by Amnesty International. I know a lot of people, because of the conflict in Gaza, have been expressing concerns about the terrible loss of life there. It's been in the news a lot. And the various human rights issues that are coming up as a result of the conflict. As a result of that, Amnesty International, the international movement, prepared this really interesting little question and answer that sort of lays out Amnesty International's concerns and the work we've been doing in that that region as a result of that conflict. And I think you've got that ready to go, Jim?
I do. I'll just get my computer to wake up here, and
all right,
then we'll play it.
Why hasn't Amnesty condemned Israeli authorities?
Well, if accusing Israeli forces of acts that could be war crimes is not a condemnation, then I'm not sure what is. Day after day, the evidence was mounting. Hundreds of civilians have been killed, thousands of homes destroyed. Gaza's only power plant has been hit. It's cut off electricity and running water to 1.8 million people. It's hard to believe that this was not intended. If it was, it is a war crime. It is also hard to believe that a country with the military capability to really target the attacks has killed so many civilians.
Why hasn't Amnesty condemned Hamas for firing rockets into Israel?
We have. People have been killed, their homes and their properties have been damaged. We know that rockets fired from Gaza cannot be accurately aimed, meaning that Hamas has been firing untargeted missiles into Israel. Some Palestinian armed group leaders have even indicated that they have no qualms about launching attacks against civilians, and actually that they want to carry out these attacks intending to kill and injure Israeli civilians. This is a war crime. We have continually condemned Hamas and all Palestinian armed groups for firing indiscriminate rockets into Israel.
Have Hamas and Palestinian armed groups use Palestinian civilians as human shields, as Israeli authorities claimed?
Well, we have no evidence that Hamas or Palestinian armed groups have ordered people to stay in their homes as a kind of shield against attacks. But we do know that they have been putting people in danger by storing weapons, by firing rockets from residential areas. But keep in mind that, though, even if human shields are being used, international law is clear that Israel still has to protect those people.
Why have you been calling this a conflict? Wasn't it an occupation by Israel?
It was a conflict because there was fighting, but that isn't to say that Israel hasn't occupied Gaza. It absolutely has, although not everyone would agree. So for the last 7 years, Israel has imposed a military blockade on Gaza. It's been controlling all but one of Gaza's land border crossings, its waters off its coast and its airspace. So Israel restricts vital imports such as building materials, and it bans most exports. Israel's occupation is a man-made humanitarian crisis, and it blights the lives of Gaza's residents. So the blockade has to be lifted.
So what do you actually mean when you keep talking about international law?
In a nutshell, the laws of war, meaning that those involved in any conflict must do everything they can do to avoid harming civilians, so people not involved in the conflict. Deliberate attacks on civilians or civilian buildings, whether that's homes, medical facilities, schools, government offices, anything like that, are strictly banned. So using weapons that cannot accurately pinpoint a target in areas with crowded with civilians and not differentiating between civilian and military targets is also strictly not allowed.
So what exactly has Amnesty done?
Well, we've called on both sides to respect the laws of war and to help people not involved in the fighting stay safe. It was so serious and so shocking that we're actually lobbying hard for the International Criminal Court to investigate what has happened, and we're researching and building a strong case to make sure that those responsible answer for their actions. At the same time, we've been mobilising millions of our activists all around the world to make sure that countries stop arming Israel, Hamas and the Palestinian armed groups with weapons that they can use to commit war crimes. In fact, one of our key action targets is the USA, Israel's biggest arms supplier. An arms embargo would be a way for countries to send a really strong message that they refuse to be accomplices in the kind of horror that is taking place in Israel and Gaza.
And that's a pretty interesting, fairly clear statement of Amnesty's position on what's happening in Gaza, and really, I think, goes a long way to explaining why Hamas is doing what it's doing.
Well, and it also is clear in terms of condemning the Israeli government for what they've done, and also Hamas for the actions that they've undertaken. I think both sides need to step back and respect human rights of civilians in the region. And one of the things that Amnesty is doing that is really important that people can participate in quite simply is calling on the American government to stop arming Israel. Over the last several weeks, despite having condemned Israel for the continuing conflict and the killing of civilians, the American government has been rearming Israel, and that has really contributed to further civilian casualties. There's no doubt about that. One of the other things is they've been refueling. The American government has been refueling Israel and sending additional supplies. So we can all participate in the effort to say to the American government, you need to step back from doing that. When there's been tragedy in terms of civilians who have been killed in, you know, the UN shelters, schools where people were sheltering in the Gaza Strip that were being run by the United Nations and were clearly identified as such to the Israeli government. Despite all that, after several attempts to let the Israeli government know where people were sheltering, those United Nations facilities were attacked and civilians were killed. The Americans said that was wrong, but unfortunately they've continued to refuel them. So we need to keep the pressure on. Currently, as we speak today, there are some signs of hope in the sense that there's a temporary, very fragile ceasefire, and there are some talks that are going on. But both sides need to be pressured to continue talking rather than killing civilians.
Yeah, when you look at the severe constraints on Gazans, it's hard to understand how they are actually able to survive, because every important commodity, food, medicine, anything you want to name, is in short supply, and the Israelis let very little through. It's very 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 difficult place to live.
Yeah, and there no place, no way, no capacity to escape as well, the Gaza Strip. So, I wanted just to mention another area of the Middle East where there's also significant concern, and this has been in the news a little bit. In reality, I think the events in Gaza have still kind of overshadowed some of the other conflicts in the region. And one of the significant concerns that has been reported somewhat, but not enough, is the terrible situation facing the Kurdish people and Iraqi mm-hmm. Christians
right.
who are in Iraq. Because of the, literal situation where there's ethnic cleansing that's going on in northern Iraq because of the conflict there with a group, it's called ISIS, and they are, you know, creating all kinds of concerns in terms of human rights issues. Large numbers of people have fled due to the fighting. Some have crossed, if you can imagine, from some of the people have actually crossed the Iraqi-Syrian border from Iraq into Syria, knowing that there's risk in Syria because there's conflict there. Large numbers of people have been trapped on the Sinjar Mountain. Fortunately, over the last few days, humanitarian aid has begun to arrive, but the scale of it is nowhere near what it needs to be. I actually happened to meet just a few weeks ago here in Regina a couple from Iraq who are Iraqi Christians who fled there in April. They came to Canada. They've claimed refugee status and were down here for their refugee hearing. And it was interesting to talk to them. They fled knowing that there were going to be problems. They could see the in terms of the area of Iraq where they lived, that there were going to be significant concerns. They left, and since then, the home they had there has been destroyed. Large-scale killings have happened. The Iraqi Christian community has been given the choice of either converting or being killed. And, you know, hundreds of women have been abducted in that region. It's the conflict there is just really, really serious. And we're calling on the Canadian government to step up to the plate and provide as much humanitarian aid as possible. There has been an announcement that by the Canadian government that $5 million of humanitarian aid will be provided through the International Red Cross, but there needs to be more, and we feel the Canadian government could take a role in also supporting efforts to encourage other partners in the international community.
It's interesting, the Americans have sort of stepped up there. They have approximately 1,000 people on the ground there now trying to support the refugees there, the Christians and the Kurdish people. The interesting political thing that's happened here is that has been done by executive order from President Obama, and anything that he does like that, it has to be basically ratified by Congress in 60 days, and we're now on day 61. Mm-hmm. So not sure what's going on there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the situation faced by the Kurdish people and the Iraqi Christians is very, very serious. So it's something that we hope that in terms of the role of the Canadian government, there will be as much humanitarian aid provided as possible.
It's incredible the hardships that are being faced there by people who are not Muslim. I remember when we were talking to Barzan,
yes,
about you know, the Kurdish people. I assumed, of course, that everybody in that part of the world was going to be Muslim, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
There's a significant percentage of Kurds who are Muslim, but they're not by any means a Muslim state.
And there's a large, very old Iraqi Christian community as well.
Mm-hmm.
I should say I've talked to Barzan over the last couple of weeks, and he's very concerned. He's got family that are missing in the area.
Oh, no.
And they haven't been able to reach them, and it's a very serious concern.
Right, for sure.
So, Jim, I think there was one other bit of news that you were going to share,
mm-hmm.
and that has to do with the United States and recent events there that have been making the news, and you've got a bit of information that Amnesty's put out about it.
It's kind of interesting. If you've been watching the news lately, The title here is urgent. The USA is urgently investigating, or they need to urgently investigate policing methods after the use of lethal force in Missouri. And in addition to a prompt, thorough, independent, and impartial investigation into allegations that police shot dead an unarmed teenager, black, of course, in Missouri, an investigation into the use of heavy-handed tactics to disperse a wave of protests in the wake of the shooting must be launched without delay. And if you watched any of the video, you can see that it looked like a military response. You know, in the video that we saw, They're all in military gear, and they have an armored vehicle, and it didn't look like a police response. So anyway, what is now urgently needed? This is Eric Guevara Rosas, America's director of Amnesty International. What is now urgently needed are thorough investigations, not further inflammation of the incredibly tense situation in the aftermath of Michael Brown being shot dead. Any police officer suspected of having committed unlawful acts must be held to account through effective investigation and, where warranted, prosecution. Using excessive force to quell protests is unacceptable. Police in Ferguson must conform to the U.S. Constitution and international standards on the use of force and firearms. Residents must be allowed to peacefully exercise their right to freedom of expression, and journalists must not be prevented from carrying out their work. And if you've been following the news there, Gord, I think there's been at least two basically arrested and then released, but, you know, not charged with anything. The call comes after police last night again used tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse a demonstration in Ferguson, the St. Louis suburb where an unarmed African-American teenager, Michael Brown, was shot dead by a police officer on August 9th. According to media reports, police arrested at least 10 people during last night's protest, as well as two journalists who were covering the story yesterday afternoon. On August 13th, Amnesty International USA wrote to the Ferguson Police Department in Missouri to express its deep concern over the shooting of Michael Brown and the use of tear gas and rubber bullets at a demonstration against his death on the evening of August 11th. And I think further developments on this, I think the actual Ferguson Police Department is standing down, and there's state police in there now who they've backed off on the military approach and trying to calm things down.
Yeah, and there really does urgently need to be an investigation and inquiry into, first of all, the police shooting, and then the response of the police in the last week.
Well, it's time for a break, Gord. So we're gonna do that, and we'll come back with some music, and this is going to be music from one of the performers that we saw this past weekend at the Folk Festival. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
Sin miedo, mujer, corazón sincero.
And I'm going to give you my best attempt here at pronunciation. Kike Escamilla. How's that?
All right. Sounds good to me.
And he was at the Folk Fest and a wonderful performer. And actually, there's a pretty good list of wonderful performers. My taste in music kind of tend more towards the unusual and offbeat stuff. So, and I like Latin music as well.
Yeah.
And I like Kike. And I also liked Daka Braka.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Did you hear that one,
too? I didn't.
Oh, yeah. They were amazing. They were amazing. Very, very... you might call it freaky music. I know some of my friends that I was with at the festival, it wasn't their cup of tea, but I just really enjoyed it because it was so unusual, and there were so many unusual harmonies and sounds and stuff. It was great. I just the one thing that I was disappointed about, I went to buy a CD, and they didn't have any.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So you were able to get into the evening performances?
You betcha.
Night?
Yes, I did.
And you survived the storm on Saturday night, or Friday night, I guess, was the big storm.
I do have to compliment the folks that were managing the stage on Friday night because they obviously made the right call. They first of all, they shut down and said, well, we're going to watch the storm system and see what happens. And it wasn't very long after that that they decided that things did not look good, and they shut things down and advised us all to get home. And I was nicely at home in my bed before things really started to get wild,
okay.
Which is not very far. I'm just living downtown, you know.
Yeah.
So that was obviously the smartest decision. So it was too bad that the crowd missed Sam Roberts. I think if you went to the After Hours party, he played there at the Exchange.
I'm not sure. I thought I saw something where
he wasn't
able to because the power was off at the Exchange that
night. Okay.
So I know they tried to set that up. But,
well, maybe it was a very acoustic performance.
I really got to say that there's so many people involved as volunteers at the Folk Festival, and they work so hard to make that a success. They really need to be congratulated. I mean, there would have been a fair bit of drying out to do and pumping water out of the park Saturday to make that work, I'm sure. And that's in addition to, you know, setting up fencing and all the rest of the things the volunteers do. So
it was kind of soggy this past weekend. Yeah, you
but,
had to be careful where you set up.
But it was a good one. It
yes,
was,
for sure.
Yeah. So
and there was the odd guy up there, too, that was, on a human rights topic, you know, I forget which one. I should look it up. I've got the thing in front of me, but that fellow from Vancouver that, had comments about things that were happening in Vancouver. Very much
good.
A kind of a human rights type of performance. And there were a couple of them, you know, that. So that's kind of where folk music is, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So we can never get enough of that, as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah.
Hey. All things considered, it was great. It was great.
A good weekend.
Yep.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
So, there's a little bit of sad news with respect to another artist. We've just listened to one that's an artist and an activist, and a little bit of sad news with respect to one friend of Amnesty International, a very well-known and famous artist that we lost this week. Of course, that's Robin Williams. And just wanted to share a little bit about a tribute that's been done. It's posted on the Amnesty International website. It's actually written by a fellow named Bill Shipsey, who's the founder of Art for Amnesty. And he mentions that in the Steven Spielberg film AI, which in this case doesn't mean Amnesty International, it means artificial intelligence.
Okay.
the character played by Robin Williams recited the W.B. Yeats poem, The Stolen Child. And it goes like this. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with the fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. You know, Robin Williams in real life realized that the world was indeed full of weeping, and principally through his art, but also through his advocacy, he tried so hard to make the world a better place.
Many people in Amnesty have their favorite artist who has supported us down the years. Many of them have been comedians. And we recall fondly all of their favorite sketches. One of the most memorable ones was a sketch that Robin Williams did in for Amnesty in 1986. And it was to support the Conspiracy of Hope tour that was touring around the world at the time. He will be missed, and it is really tragic news to hear of his passing. It not only in terms of the context in which this happened, where he was it's been acknowledged he was facing some personal issues in terms of his mental health, but also knowing now in the last couple of days that he had found out he had Parkinson's. It's a tough bit of news, and we certainly want to extend to his family and his friends our sympathies. So for people who might be just tuning in at this point in the program, welcome if you're listening to Human Rights Radio. My name's Gord Barnes, and I'm here with Jim Hutchings, who's our co-host and regularly here on Fridays. And we've been sort of just sharing some updates about what's happening around the world and some news about current events. Jim, you've got something to share in terms of some good news.
This is amazing, Gord. Yeah. Really, really amazing. I think most of us are aware of the terrible things that happened under the military dictatorship that ruled Argentina quite a few years ago. And the headline here is, after 38 years, Estela Barnes de Carlotto has found her grandson. Yesterday, that would be August 6th, it was confirmed that Estela Barnes de Carlotto, founder of the organization Abduelas de Plaza de Mayo, recovered, after 38 years of search, her grandson, who was abducted in June of 1978. Estela's daughter, Laura Carlotto, was kidnapped in November 1977, 2 months pregnant, together with her partner. Laura was able to hold her son for only 5 minutes, and she named him Guido, after her father, Estela's husband. In August 1978, Laura's lifeless body was rendered to Estela. That was actually unusual for the time. The tireless, courageous struggle of Estela and all of the Abduelas and Madres de Plaza de Mayo was a powerful source of inspiration during the years of state terror. And you stop and think about it, Gord, 38 years. What a long time to be on that trail, on that task, yeah. and to do it without flagging.
Yeah.
Anyway, it followed that despite the return of fragile democracy, led by indomitable women like Estela, the Madres and Abduelas never gave up hope of finding the children that were stolen from them and refused to be paralyzed by fear, even when some of their ranks were also disappeared by the military. Abduelas de Plaza de Mayo and Estela have the fight for memory, truth, and justice in Argentina all these years. Since the recovery of democracy, 114 children have been restituted, including Guido. All restitutions have been a reason for joy and celebration. Nevertheless, this one is especially emblematic given the figure of Estela. And we just have a little more information here. During the years of military government from 1976 to 1983, thousands of people were abducted by the security forces and disappeared. The Grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo was established in 1977 by relatives of the disappeared to try to find children who had been abducted, as well as those born in captivity, many of whom were adopted by members of the security forces. So just a horrendous situation there over the years. So, but some progress.
Well, and you know, there's a little interesting story about that too. When that news came out earlier this week, one of the people who was very active in the leadership role in the Amnesty International group here in Regina years ago, prior to my own involvement,
she mentioned that at that point in time when people in the international community, human rights activists from around the world were initially trying to provide support to the Madres de Plaza de Mayo, the Regina Amnesty Group actually made posters that were put up around the community and throughout Saskatchewan to create awareness of that whole issue. And, you know, that's years ago, but it shows that even in the early days, Amnesty was here in Regina and throughout Saskatchewan involved in trying to support the people of Argentina who are calling for justice and the mothers who had lost their children and their grandchildren. So to hear this news this last week has been really amazing news. I think there's a second bit of news that you were going to share. In this case, it's about the story is about Sudan and a bit of a success story there, too.
Right. This is about Miriam Yahya Ibrahim. I think I've done justice to that. She is safe at last. Miriam Yahya Ibrahim and her family left Sudan and arrived in Italy on July 24th, 2014. Amnesty International continues to press the government of Sudan to change the laws so that no one ever has to endure this kind of ordeal again. She arrived in New Hampshire on July 30th to begin a new life with her husband and children. According to Ibrahim's brother-in-law, Gabriel Wani, he said, Ibrahim had been granted asylum by the U.S. government. I am so relieved, Daniel Wani, Ibrahim's government said to reporters at the airport. I think the issue here was that she was Christian. Was that not the issue, Gordon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she was going to, wasn't she under sentence of death, if I'm not mistaken, just because she wasn't Muslim?
Yeah.
Incredible. There's a lot of work to be done in the world.
Yeah. It's good news that she's been able to get out of Sudan in this instance. But there are many, many other stories like hers that we need to continue our work on, and
apparently,
we're just so happy that in this instance, you know, the international community really rallied behind her case.
Yeah, for sure. Apparently, over a million Amnesty International supporters and members in Canada and worldwide spoke up for her, and she was sentenced to 100 lashes and death by hanging. And after 4 months in prison with her 20-month-old son, Martin, and after giving birth to her daughter, Maya, on a floor in shackles, she was finally released from prison and reunited with her husband. But it is unbelievable, and hopefully we can have, Amnesty can have some influence on the government in Sudan to change the laws and make this impossible to happen again.
Yeah. So I just wanted to take a little bit of time before the end of the program just to reflect as well a little bit about what's been happening in Egypt. And because, you know, it's a year ago now that, actually a year ago this week, that more than 600 protesters were slaughtered in one day by the Egyptian security forces.
Wow.
And despite that time passing, now there's not been a single officer who has been prosecuted. And in the contrary to that, Egypt's criminal justice system's actually been quite swift to arrest, try and sentence supporters who are, people who are alleged to be supporters of the Morsi government that was deposed. And after grossly unfair mass trials, there have been already 232 people who have been condemned to death. And the courts are recommending death sentences for over 1,000. It's just incredible to think about that in terms of what's going on in that country. And that, by the way, is the country that is, you know, trying to broker at this point some kind of peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza.
That's incredible.
And, you know, when you read the reports about what happened a year ago, it is just incredible. One of the senior Amnesty International researchers were actually on the scene at the time. There was reports of live bullets that were killing people in large numbers. People were laying bleeding on the street, dragged into doorways as medics tried to treat them. The large numbers of people in the mosque who had been killed, families who were trying to find other family members. And it was just chaos in Egypt a year ago. And despite all this, as I mentioned, there has been nobody charged with what happened that day. Instead, people who were protesting have been charged and sentenced to death in grossly unfair trials. It is just incredible to reflect on this. And now we are seeing a situation as the trials proceed that three judges have quite recently recused themselves from the trials. There really been basically show trials. There's been no time allotted to them. You know, over 494 people, if you can imagine, on trial in one instance. And it's just unbelievable to think that this is happening in this year 2014, where so many people, this includes, by the way, 12 people who are minors, who are being held in detention, which is clearly in direct contravention of Egyptian law, never mind international human rights standards. It includes young people who are actually, in many cases, shot themselves, arrested. They were badly treated. In one instance, Amnesty International is reporting on a individual who has been arrested at the time. He was wounded, shot in the hand. The only medical attention he received was provided by another cellmate who happened to be a doctor. A doctor who had been arrested, if you can imagine, who was then providing medical care people in jail in Egypt. The international community really needs to come to bear on Egypt to live up to international human rights standards. It's clearly not. We've talked previously on this program about the journalists who are, including a Canadian citizen, who are in jail now in Egypt for reporting. It's just a serious, serious kind of situation in terms of what's going on in Egypt. So wanted to share that before the end of the program. And the other thing I wanted to do is just mention briefly, because we heard a little bit of music by a performer just after the break from Mexico. And I just wanted to mention that as part of our Stop Torture campaign, we're highlighting the case of a woman. Her name is Claudia Mendina Tamares. She's a Mexican woman. She was tortured in Mexico in 2012. She was paraded out there after she signed a confession after torture. However, later, you know, they had accused her of membership in a powerful, dangerous criminal gang, which she had flatly denied. Her torturers gave her electric shocks, beat her, sexually assaulted her, and tied her to a chair, and left her outside in the afternoon sun.
Oh.
If you can imagine, August 7th, about 2 years ago now, 2012. And this was done by the Mexican Marines. They know who did this. Nobody has been charged. The Mexican government has not investigated the situation where Claudia was tortured. And as part of Amnesty International's campaign against torture, this is one of the key cases where people can really make a difference by going online and supporting the online petition, calling on Mexico to launch an effective investigation into what happened. And we think it's absolutely important that this kind of case be highlighted here in Canada, because I know so many people here in Canada do travel to Mexico. We have an influence in terms of the Mexican government if we raise our voice on behalf of people like Claudia.
For sure, Gord. It's definitely very important. And before we're just about out of time here. Before we finish up here, can we just give the folks a few more details about what's going to happen in Humboldt?
Oh, good idea. So what we were mentioning at the beginning of the program that October 18th, Saturday, October 18th, will be our Saskatchewan Get Active with Amnesty Provincial Conference. It's free, and people will be able to come and attend from all across the province. We've got somebody from the Amnesty International Canada Board attending and who will be assisting with workshops, along with two people from the staff, and we'll be having a lot of interesting discussion and dialogue about how we can create a larger and more dynamic human rights community here in Saskatchewan. I'd encourage people to go to our Facebook page, Amnesty International Saskatchewan. We'll be posting stuff there over the next couple of weeks in terms of updating people about that event, and really looking forward to it.
Where's it going to be held, actually, Gard?
At Westminster United Church in Humboldt. And again, that's Saturday, October 18th.
Saturday, October 18th. Okay, everybody, mark your calendars. And if you've ever been to one of these, I think you'll all agree that it's an amazing event, and we have some wonderful speakers. It's always great to get the people from head office in Ottawa to come and talk to us, so we're really looking forward to that. And that does it for us now as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber has been closed, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Rights, human rights, is a reality for the world's people, will our work be done."